Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
We're off to the UK now to chat with Hannah Ingram-Moore. She's one of Britain's leading businesswomen, an accredited life coach, decorated motivational speaker, and a proud supporter of female entrepreneurs worldwide. Her father, the late Captain Sir Tom Moore, captured the hearts of the world by raising the astronomical sum in excess of £38 million for NHS charities together during the pandemic. Hannah and other family members have set up a Gift of Kindness online campaign, inviting people to share stories of moments of kindness they've received throughout their lives. Welcome to the show, Hannah.
Well, thank you very much. It's delightful to be here.
Oh, it's so lovely to chat with you. It's just been your father. I mean, what a guy. You must just be beaming with pride every time you think of him and people ask you about him. I mean, just amazing.
Incredible. Can you imagine? So a little very quick background, of course. So you may know that my father and my mother lived in Spain for a period of time down on the south coast. And they had gone there really to retire and live a lovely life. And tragically, my mother became poorly. She had dementia and they had to come back to the UK. And there they lived, and he supported her through years and years of the tragedy and loss of dementia and Alzheimer's, as many people will know. And she sadly died in 2006. In 2007, my husband and I were moving for work in the UK. We asked him to come with us, and we lived this most extraordinary a multi-generational, magical life that we had never imagined that would happen. But what happened is my children were born into this environment, and now, of course, they are the product of that multi-generational life. And he was happy and had purpose. And I think that's what the world saw, and it's what the world's people still talk to me about.
Yeah. So take us back to that time during the pandemic and how he became so famous so quickly. I mean, what did he want to achieve, and how did that come about?
Well, unfortunately, in 2018, as able as he was at 98, he tripped in the kitchen whilst he was unloading the dishwasher, and tragically broke his hip, punctured a lung because he had a broken rib. And we really didn't think that he would make it. But in fact, he came through it with incredible help. And that was in late 2018. 2019, we were beginning to get back on our feet. And then, of course, the pandemic happened. And it was in that second weekend of lockdown, as many, many people will understand, that my husband and I sat outside wondering what on earth would happen, whether we have our own business, we could sustain ourselves or our employees and my father, the children. And in that vein, like many people, I think we were topping up our wine glasses, glad at least that we had toilet roll and wine. And my children, we said, let's put some food on the barbecue. And my father came out for his first rehabilitation walk of that year. He was desperately trying to be a driver again, to get back out cutting the grass. And remember the mindset and the mood we were all in then. And my husband turned to him and said, well, Tom, as Boris Johnson's cancelled your 100th birthday party, because we'd just gone into lockdown, why don't you walk up and down 100 times and we'll give you a pound a lap? And my father said, well, okay, seems like a fair challenge. And anyway, we said, well, we can't keep the £100. We'll have to give it. So very quickly, I said, well, why don't we pick a charity that supports the National Health Service and let's make it £1,000 and let's put a Just Giving page on. And we did all that. And the kids said, shall we make an iMovie, Mum? And they did, and got friends and family saying, support Captain Tom walking for the NHS, because I'd said, we have to call you something. Let's call you Captain Tom. And he went, but you can't. I retired in 1945. And we sent it out, and truly we thought, well, if we make people smile and we get a column in the local paper, we're happy. And in a week, we had raised £500,000. In 2 weeks, it was £12 million. And in 3.5 weeks, it was £38.9 million. And some of these stats are extraordinary. People from 163 countries had donated. That's nearly the whole world. He'd done hundreds of interviews in the last year of life, 1,000. And I think he realized that he'd become this connector of humanity. And that sounds really trite and ridiculous, but he did.
Yeah.
He crossed the boundaries of gender, race, nationality, social status, and age. And I think, you know, the question for you and your listeners is, what did you see and what did you feel? Because we felt something extraordinary happening.
Oh, it absolutely was. And it's amazing, you know, when you think about it, raising money for the NHS, which is obviously an organisation in the UK, to think that people from all over the world were giving money to a country and to a health service that isn't affecting them or probably their friends or family at all is extraordinary.
Extraordinary. And what we realised, of course, because the first interview we did, we thought, oh, how lovely. This is amazing. We might make £1,000. And then very quickly, we had to draw on our strength internally as a family and think, the world needs him. And what they needed him for, whilst, of course, many people look on to the UK and admire the National Health Service, even in its all its trouble and strife, it wasn't about that. It was about hope. And my father, we realized, represented something that many people connected with. It was someone who, look, if you and I had said, don't worry, everything will be all right, we were going to, yeah, I'd be really, how do you know? But because he was 100, he was able to look people in the eye and say that things have been terrible before, and they will be terrible again. And, you know, we will get through this. It will be better. We are human beings, and we're ultimately kind, and we're resilient, and together we can be positive, and together we can get through it. And that's what people donated for. It was amazing.
Oh, it really was. It really was. And I remember at the time, every post that people, friends of mine from around the world were sharing on social media, everybody was just like, oh, go on, Captain Tom. Everyone was just completely behind him. And what a guy. And oh, we love you, Tom. And I mean, it was really just amazing. And you must have been just beside yourself thinking, oh my goodness, this is my father.
Yes, but because we didn't have time, because within a week, the world was in our living room, in our garden, and people now, wherever I go, will stop me and say, oh, Captain Tom's daughter, and yes, or if I'm with the children, they go, oh, it's Captain Tom's grandchildren, and they'll say where they were. And then one guy recently stopped me and said, oh, my girlfriend and I watched you and your father every single morning whilst we were in our beds with our cups of tea. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that happens is I think that we feel as a family like a safe space. And so people will share their most incredible life stories, grief, love, loss, and so much of what my father meant to them. And I think we as a family recognize very quickly it was not about us. We were just the backup team. It was about him and ensuring that the world got to speak to him. That was our entire ambition.
Mm. I think you hit the nail on the head with the word hope, because during the pandemic, those early months particularly, people were afraid. People had no idea what was happening, how long it was going to be going on for, if and when, as if, I mean, is a big thing, when they were going to be able to see their loved ones again. And it was, yeah, it was a scary time. And people were desperate for some kind of positivity and some hope. And yeah, your father seemed to be the beacon of that, didn't he?
He really did. He touched people, and again, in a way that almost no one else has done it, because he did. You could have easily written him and us off as, well, they're all right. You know, they're clearly living in a space that's, you know, they've got space, they've got a garden. And we were worried that people would think that we weren't sincere. But actually, no one thought that, at least probably plenty of people did, that the majority did not. And they looked on and they saw him. And they saw him as someone who was a steadying hand, someone they could trust over and above the politicians, someone they could trust and look at and say, yes, he reminds me of my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather. And we have trust and faith in that generation. And he could look them in the eye and say, it's all right. Together, we'll get through it. And people were frightened. And he was able to calm their fears. And across all divides, he did that.
Mm. Was he aware of the huge impact that he had around the world? How did he feel about it?
Yes, I think it grew on him because, of course, we were all taken by storm and were just cracking on, really, and saying, you know, we were brought up with the many of the Yorkshire sayings, and it was best foot forward, get on with it. You know, life has presented us this phenomenon, so deal with it. And occasionally we would manage to sit and look at each other. And because I sat shoulder to shoulder with him because he was hard of hearing, and I would say to him, you know that you're touching people all around the world. And one of the pivotal moments was when we'd set up a Twitter feed for people to follow him on. And I said, you've got 400,000 followers. And he said, right. And in his quite northern accent, right. And then he said, why do people bother with Twitter? And I mean, it's a good question. And I said, well, it's sort of like a moving news channel, but anyone can say whatever they like. He went, okay. And the point is? And I said, the point is people can follow you and listen to you and they want to hear what you have to say. And he went, and where are these followers? Like looking around to see where they might be. And I said, well, you know what's amazing? They're around the world and they're looking at you and they want to hear from you. And so he did begin to really appreciate it. Yes.
Wow. And what was the last kind of, I don't want to upset you, sorry, I don't mean to go into too much kind of personal detail, but what were the last kind of year or so like with him after this had all happened and kind of the media storm calmed down a little bit? Did you kind of go back to reality, or had reality changed forever for you?
Yeah, reality had changed forever. It never really calmed down. Wherever we went with him, of course, we were living in a post, you know, semi-pandemic world, but people would queue for hours, hours. It didn't matter. They would queue in socially distanced queues to get photos with him, to talk to him, wouldn't matter where we were. So life has changed. It changed irrevocably for him, even in his very last days. People, you know, there were news stations from around the world outside the hospital he was in, and he knew right to the end. And in those last few hours I had with him, because I was able to be, they let me go in and spend because they knew he was going. He talked to me about the most phenomenal year and the money that was raised for charity. And he said to me, Hannah, it's up to you now. You have to carry on. And he left this world truly, really happy.
Oh, beautiful. So do you feel a certain amount of responsibility with what he said to you in those final moments?
Gosh, yes. I mean, gosh, the responsibility, I think, is palpable. The whole family feel it. You know, the children feel it. Well, they're not so much children anymore. You know, they're 19 and 15 and they carry their grandfather with them wherever they go. And people engage with them and they want to hear them. And yes, we feel that our life's ambition is to ensure that his legacy, the legacy he left us, left the world, can be touched by the world, that people can engage with it. And so, you know, we try always to think of how can we give people hope in his name? How can we give people positivity in his name? And look, he gave me something incredible, he and my mother. They gave me the spirit of belief in myself, especially as a woman in this world, in the business world. And I carry so many of the skills that I was given by him as a man who was in his 50s when I was born. So he could have been totally the opposite. But he said, you go out there and you prove. You'll have to work harder, you'll have to work longer, and you'll have to be better. But you can do it and you'll make a difference. And that's what he believed, and that's part of his legacy also.
Yeah. Fabulous. So tell us about this Gift of Kindness campaign. It's a really lovely idea.
Well, it came really from the public, because as we move around, we were living in quite difficult circumstances here, particularly in the UK at the moment. I know that Europe is very similar, though. Cost of living has increased dramatically. Fuel prices are extortionate. People are suffering. And so, you know, when I talked about that safe space that I've become for people, people will engage with me and talk about how they feel and some of the challenges that they're going through. And I came home one day and we were sitting around the kitchen table and said, look, what can we do? And people talk so often about the kindness of my father and that they felt that he was so kind and he believed in kindness. Maybe we can pick people up by asking them to share their kindness stories, because when you're feeling low and challenged by life, it's quite often easy to forget how lovely people can be. So we thought, if we can create a space for people to share, it just might give people a little lift. And we didn't go crazy in telling people about it. We thought we'd just see if it would pick up organically. And it was picked up very quickly in America. And you'll see if you scan through the messages, there are a lot from overseas. And that's amazing, you see, because his legacy lives, that this isn't something that's UK-centric. This is something that the world can take part in. And he would just be so thrilled. The messages, honestly, if you're having a bad day, please go onto the website. It costs nothing. There's no money involved. It's simply about sharing your wonderful stories. And the stories, some of them are so joyful, some are heartbreaking. They're an extraordinary window on the wonder of humanity.
And the website is?
agiftofkindness.net.
Wonderful. Is there one short story you can share with us, something that sticks out?
Yeah, well, something that came in just really recently. I mean, beautiful, beautiful stories. But one talked about he is a chap in India, and he runs a sanctuary for animals. And he said that watching the animals rehabilitating was like watching my father walking in all those steps that he walked. And he just, his dog had just had three puppies, and he called one Captain, one Sir, and one Tom. And he wanted to thank us as a family for allowing him to share his story. But I mean, just one more is that someone realized that they open the door for people. They stand up if someone needs a seat. They help people with their bags, and they're just a generally nice person. But it wasn't until the website that they recognized that they actually were very nice. And so they said, let's recognize kindness in each other. It's such a lovely thing. And so, yeah, please have a look. It's just lovely.
Oh, fabulous. Well, the website again, agiftofkindness.net, so people can find lots of lovely stories on the website. Oh, Hannah, it's been an absolute delight to chat with you today. I'd love to say I didn't cry, but I have.
Well, it makes me cry when I tell it too, so don't worry. The whole world cries, but they're happy tears, right?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Hannah Ingram,
to talk to you.
And you, Hannah Ingram Moore, thank you so much for joining us, and the website again, agiftofkindness.net. Thank you, Hannah. You take care.
Bye.